Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we hear from one of the state's top military doctors, learn about a Red Cross deployment, and discover a hunting guide service available to our wounded warriors. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
March is Women's History Month. The theme for this year's annual recognition is Women Inspiring Innovation Through Imagination. Despite the well-planned national theme, I'd be willing to argue that this year's theme could be Women Inspiring Innovation Through Imagination on the Battlefield. In January, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta removed the military's ban on women serving in combat, opening hundreds of thousands of frontline positions and potentially elite forces assignment after more than a decade at war. According to the Library of Congress, American women have been involved in the last four major wars. During Korea and Vietnam, women saw few advances in their roles in the military services. Then in the 15 years between the end of the Vietnam War and the start of Operation Desert Shield, the armed forces opened up many specialties to women. In the Persian Gulf War, as well as conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, women's participation expanded immensely. Here in the Minnesota National Guard, more than 15% of our 11,000 soldiers are women, while 22% of our 2,200 Air Guard members are women. What does fully integrating females mean for the Minnesota National Guard? First, I'm happy to report that both of the Air National Guard wings are already fully integrated. No positions exist that females can't apply for. As far as the Army National Guard, one of our units, the Red Bulls of the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 34th Infantry Division, is in a preliminary step for this future policy change. They are part of a pilot program that focuses on assigning female soldiers to the headquarters of combat arms units. The repeal of the 1994 Direct Ground Combat Definition and Assignment Rule for women allows for the recruitment of more female soldiers and airmen, making our force more diverse. The Minnesota National Guard is committed to fostering an environment that truly represents the demographics of the communities in which we serve. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Colonel David Hamler, who is the commander of the 133rd Medical Group, which is part of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota Air National Guard, and he's also our Air Force State Surgeon. Colonel Hamler, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
It's been, you were one of our first guests a little over 2 years ago. It's been quite a while. Welcome back, sir.
I barely remember that, but I remember calling in at that time.
You did call in then, and you did a great job, sir. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career? When did it start, and how did you end up being the Air Force State Surgeon?
It's a long story because I got the gray hair to prove it. But way back in the late 70s, I went to school. Actually, I was thinking about medical school at the time, but ended up going to dental school. And a way to pay for that was through scholarship program through the National Health Service Corps. So they paid for my dentistry. I got my dental career started, and lo and behold, I wanted to be a physician, so I went back. Now, I was a product of the Vietnam era program where you could match, the government matched $3 for each dollar you put in. So not only did the government pay for my dental education, but they also pay for my medical education.
That was a great way to get started, wasn't it, sir?
Yeah, yeah. It was, at that time, maybe the dollars went a little further, but it still got me to a point where I could make some decisions as far as my career path. And after being in the service, which was a commissioned officer, I was getting my eyes examined by an ophthalmologist, and he had jet fighter craft all over the walls. I said, hey, I know something about that. And he said, well, I'm in the National Guard. And I had no idea. When you're in active duty, they don't tell you anything about the Guard, at least in those days. And lo and behold, I was in the National Guard probably within a month. And that was in Ohio. And my training was there. I came to Minnesota to do a fellowship. And after arriving here, I was just welcomed. I mean, just unbelievable welcome attitude of the people. And they offered me a job, and I stayed.
And that was in, what year was it, 1995?
That would have been 94, 95. And after they offered me the job, I joined the University of Minnesota. And at that time, I had transferred units from the 121st, which was a refueling unit, originally A7s, to the Guard here. And right over the airport, I lived in Eagan, so it was right across the bridge, the then Mendota Bridge, and joined them. At that time, the state air surgeon was trying to recruit me to Duluth. He said, we have some fast movers up there, and you maybe want to join them. I said, well, that's like 2.5 hours away, and this one's 5 minutes away. I think I'll stay at the 133rd, and I haven't regretted it since.
Easy choice, sir.
Yeah.
I think the last time you were on, sir, you were talking to us about some humanitarian missions that the 133rd was flying. And were you the flight surgeon then?
I was flight surgeon. I was commander of the 133rd at the time, the 133rd medical group at the time. So yeah. those are examples of where the military gives back. Not only do we make a difference training our troops, but we make a difference in the communities we serve. And one was to Guatemala, another was to Honduras, another's been to Belize. All warm weather areas, you see, you know, and we didn't take them exactly in the winter months. We took them all year round. So.
We're speaking with the Minnesota National Guard's Air Force State Surgeon, Colonel David Hamler, on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, you've also been deployed several times, haven't you?
That has been just a wonderful thing for me personally. I know it's hard on my family, and my family, I love them to death. My wife is a saint, but I feel I was in the right place at the right time. The fellowship I came here to train was a reconstructive fellowship. So for me, with my skill set to deploy and help our young men and women who fell in harm's way, was just unbelievable. It was one of those things where I think I was truly blessed to be in that position. I don't think I at any time was ever in any danger, and I've deployed five times, six now, but I was never in any danger myself, but I give my hat off to those young men and women who put themselves in harm's way.
So, Colonel, were you at the rear hospital doing surgery, or were you on the medevac flights? Were you
at both? One point, I was doing point of injury, and they said, well, we're not going to have full bird colonels flying into these things anymore. But the thing was, we didn't have the critical care capability, at least on the medevac side, to stabilize those patients before they came back to the initial point of entry. I was basically at the larger hospitals, though. For example, in Balad, it was one of our larger theater hospitals. This last summer, I was at Bagram, which is one of our large intra-theater hospitals. That's the step that's taken right before they return to Landstuhl via Germany, then back here.
And, sir, were some of our C-130s from the 133rd equipped for the medevac missions?
That's where it all came together. Not only was I helping with our troops out in the field, but then I got to see our birds fly in and with a stable cargo, precious cargo per se, and bring them back to those hospitals and transfer them, sometimes even back up to Germany. But C-17s did that heavy lifting.
I think the last time we talked, you were telling me a story about a wounded soldier that was taken care of or airlifted by Minnesota personnel from the war zone to Germany, to the United States, all the way to Texas.
That was unbelievable, because I remember the individual was not only one of ours, but there were some other injured individuals, but one of the injured were one of ours. And we transferred them. At that time, we were in Bagram, and we actually took the patient back to Iraq and into Germany and then all the way back here.
That's so amazing. Yeah. And what great care of our soldiers.
Oh yeah. And it gives you that warm fuzzy that you know they're getting great care and that you can deliver that care.
And it's got to feel good as a unit to be able to get that all done and take good care of our soldiers that are deployed.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about what the Minnesota National Guard's Air Force State Surgeon does on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Fellow veterans and supporters, this is Lee Alfords, Department Commander of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, inviting you to join us for a ride for healing starting next Memorial Day. The week-long ride kicks off May 27th in St. Paul, covers the four corners of the state, and is capped off by a June 1st rally weekend in the Brainerd Lakes area. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veterans Memorial Education Center. For more information, visit rideforhealing.com. That's rideforhealing.com.
Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking with our Air Force, our Minnesota National Guard Air Force State Surgeon, Colonel Dr. David Hamler. And Colonel, this is a position you've taken since I talked to you the first time you were on the show almost 2 years ago, but what is the Air Force State Surgeon? What's your position now?
Yeah. I just assumed the position in January of this year. For the last 12 years, I was the commander of the 133rd, and that was good training for this. What I actually do, I have oversight over the two medical groups within the state, air wings. So the 148th in Duluth has a commander. The 133rd medical group has a commander. And a lot of the physicals or waivers, things that need one more set of eyes to look at or to scrutinize, are run by me. And I have to go to National Guard Bureau to receive training for those, for that waiver ability. So essentially, I have oversight over those units.
So you're looking at the people that have flight status to make sure that they have the physical and mental capabilities to do their jobs?
Correct, but not just limited to flight status. It's all members of the wing. So if there's someone in maintenance, for example, who has an issue with a health problem and that needs to be scrutinized, they'll probably run it by me before they say this person needs to be in or out of the unit. So just one more set of eyes to overlook it. And then there's things that I do to help them prepare for exercises if they're going to deploy. There's check boxes there or checklists that I'll give them that they have to get my okay on, so to speak.
So, Colonel, then is there a corresponding Army State Surgeon in the Minnesota National Guard?
There is. The Army Surgeon, Colonel Burns, great guy. I've just met him now that I've assumed the position. There's a deputy, Lieutenant Colonel DeGray. And what I hope in the future is that we can work more collaboratively so that there are things that function on both sides, both the Army and the air side, and where you have to work smarter now and not harder, and with less resources, we probably have to see if we can do things in a joint fashion.
And I'm sure you'll sort it out.
Yes, we will.
Colonel, I want to come back to the 133rd Airlift Wing. We've seen on this show where on the Army side, the Army National Guard, they deploy as units and go out. You know, it might be 150, it might be 2,700. Mm-hmm. But on the air side, some of the deployments are individual, but others, and I'm particularly interested in your medevac deployments, they're shorter in duration. And how do they go out? How does that work?
I also have oversight over the AES, the Aeromedical Evacuation Squadron, and that's a unit that's assigned to the 133rd, and that is the medevac you talk about. Medevac technically is helicopter. Aeromedical evacuation is on fixed wing, so the C-130s are the platform that they work out of. Now, they can work out of KC-135s, any aircraft you put there. That's how adaptable they are. But essentially, individuals in the medical field are always trained all the time. Because if there's a hurricane response, if there's a disaster, they have to respond to those as well, not just issues during war. So you have a run-up time, but if someone calls you today, you better be ready and you can be there working in 72 hours, just like my job. My job as a surgeon, I cannot say that I have any leeway not to be able to suture or to correct any malady. I have to be able to do that right away. So, in fact, we stay trained all the time. Now, there's some individuals who don't stay, their regular job doesn't correspond to what they do in the military, and they have RSVs, there's these residual training they have to do. Now, it's going to be tough with the resources that we're missing nowadays that we see in the future, but we have to keep those individuals trained. That's part of my job as state air surgeon also, find resources and find training outlets so we can maintain that training.
So, Colonel, just like the rest of the Minnesota National Guard, you have local or state missions, you have national missions, and then international or the big federal missions occasionally.
Correct. In the last few years, the air side has been called on to help with the flooding that we see up the Red River. We also have flood response for other areas of the country. Hurricane response is a large one for our capabilities to be able to fly into areas and help. And we also have a dome ops operation called Surf P. That's a sea burn. We kind of jokingly say sea burn on steroids. It's a unit that has the capability to go in, stabilize a population at risk, and transport them to hospitals that may not be available in the area, but anywhere in the country.
So your missions really can be all over the board.
Correct.
Colonel, just like the rest of the National Guard, we've learned over the last couple of years, training and preparedness is a huge part of what you oversee and what you work on all the time, isn't it?
Correct. Our training requirements, it's not without saying that, you know, you have to be ready. And our training requirements are probably not going to lessen with less resources. So we have to have the ability to be innovative and try and meet those goals despite those issues. I go back to my training, and I found that as a physician, I look for resources to help me train, and one of them was a dollar. And if I could acquire those resources, then I'd be able to fulfill my goal to be a physician. And what better way to do that than through the military? Right now in the state of Minnesota, for physicians and for people who aspire to be a physician or a PA even, we have dollars set aside at the state level to help train those physicians and take them through medical school. Now, there is an obligation at the end of that. So you owe not just the state of Minnesota, who knows where you may end up, but you're going to owe the National Guard somewhere a year for a year. So we're willing to take that risk on individuals so that they'll be able to pay back their time and give us service in the state.
We're speaking with Colonel David Hamler, the Air Force State Surgeon for the Minnesota National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I'm curious how many people come under your command as Air Force State Surgeon, and how often do they graduate and retire, and how often do you have to keep filling in with the young folks?
Yeah.
It has to be a constant battle, isn't it?
Well, you know, we have what one of our former surgeons, general surgeons up at the Guard Bureau level said, they called them spicy shrimp. So it's hard to recruit a cardiovascular surgeon. It's hard to recruit a neurosurgeon. So if you can get those people in training and that's what they end up doing, then you have them within your grasp. So I think by offering these programs where we offer to train them, to offer them money for their training, then we have a good foothold to help them come to the Guard. So it's a good recruiting tool. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. There are also availability for special bioenvironmental officers out there, public health officers. So there are dollars to help train those individuals. It's going to be harder to come by. But, we do have resources for them.
Colonel, I'm curious. It seems like in every war, every conflict, the medical side of it learns new things. Have we learned new techniques and new things in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Oh, yes. We mainly through collaboration. In most medical fields, everyone is trying to push the envelope, so to speak. But through the Army, Navy, which is Marine also, and Air Force, there's no other collaboration that I see across the board that works as well as medical. So when you have a physician who's either Air Force, you're not, or Army, you're not talking different language. You're talking medicalese. So when we get together, we say, this may be the better way to treat this person. We have studies, we do research, and it's real time. For example, an individual would be bleeding. We went back to using tourniquets where we didn't years ago. And to prevent blood loss, we would actually put a tourniquet on, knowing to monitor that. So that's something we used a long time ago and we went back to. Then there's adjuncts like quick clot, which we had applied to a wound, which stopped any bleeding immediately. Now we had to wash that stuff out of there, but it did allow us to get the individual stable and help them be transported on further for better care.
Sir, it seems like I'm a Vietnam veteran, but it seems like our troops now are surviving things that they never survived before. Yeah. Is that medical technology?
There's two. There's the medical technology helps, but it's the protective gear too. Most of the injuries that I saw were limb. In other words, a lot of the torso injuries where the vital structures are were protected by our body armor. So a lot of the injuries were not life-threatening, especially if you put a tourniquet on, you applied some type of blood clotting system. So we were able to get them back, stabilize them, keep the blood flowing, and therefore get them to a higher echelon of care. So it's a combination, not only the medical care, but also technology and our understanding of how the systems work.
Sir, we just got about a minute or two left, but I hear you when you say it's probably easier to go out and, instead of recruiting an experienced surgeon, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to create one. I think that's what you're saying to me. What would you say to the young folks listening to us today thinking about a career in the Minnesota National Guard and maybe about becoming a doctor?
I was talking to a high school group the other day, and you look out in the audience, you see these bright eyes, and everybody wants to do the best they can, and that's counter to what you maybe hear about young kids today. But with these kids, there was definitely a optimism, and they saw it was particularly it was a magnet school. It was a school that was teaching the sciences. So everybody wanted to be a physician, a scientist, a dentist. So why not encourage that, and not only encourage it by words, but encourage it by support? If you're willing to pay back a year for your training, then the National Guard's for you. Now, there's other areas in the active duty world and everything else, but if you're homegrown in Minnesota and we have the capability to help you with your training, why not look us up?
So, sir, you're still looking for a few good men and women to come into the medical part of the Minnesota National Guard?
Constantly. I left the 133rd, so there's an opening right there.
That one's at the top, but we have to fill them in from the bottom.
Well, they'll come in, but that one's open.
Colonel, any final thoughts for our listeners about your new position, the Air Force State Surgeon for the Minnesota National Guard, or a career in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, I look forward to the work that's needed for that position. I hope the Adjutant General will bear with me as I sort of do OJT on the job training. But I appreciate your efforts here, Tom. I just love this this venue, what you're doing for our troops, and keep getting the word out that what we need to do is support our young men and women in the Guard.
Colonel, I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to come in and visit with us today.
Okay. Thank you.
That was the Minnesota National Guard's Air Force State Surgeon, Colonel David Hamler, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a minute, we're going to learn about a volunteer Red Cross deployment. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
Next Tuesday, March 12th, is Veterans Day on the Hill, sponsored by the Minnesota Commanders Task Force, the United Veterans Legislative Council, and the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. The event will take place in the State Capitol Rotunda starting at 9:30 a.m. This is a day veterans will come together and deliver a unified message to energize the legislature on veterans-related issues and advocate for their 2013 legislative agenda. The event is open to the public, and veterans are encouraged to attend and meet with their legislators by appointment at the conclusion of the rally. For more information and to preview the 2013 legislative agenda, visit mnctf.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota Air National Guard is Tech Sergeant Rebecca Tongan. Rebecca, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you for letting me come here.
We're glad to have you today. Can you tell us how long have you been in the Guard, and how do you like your military career? You've been there for a while. You're a tech sergeant.
Yeah, I've actually been in the military for about 12 years. About 2 years ago was when I actually joined the Minnesota Air National Guard. I separated from active duty and joined the Minnesota Air National Guard. So great decision, though.
How do you compare active duty to the Guard?
Oh, it's a little bit of a culture change in general, but overall, I mean, you still have military standards, still pretty basic as far as that goes. But the people, when you're home, I think in general, home in Minnesota, I say, they really take care of you good, and they're like another family to you.
And the Guard's pretty highly trained, and they can handle the missions, can't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now, Rebecca, we're here to talk to today about some volunteer work you've been doing. You got involved with the Red Cross. How did that happen?
Yeah, I actually started volunteering with them almost a year ago to date. And one of my friends had told me about him volunteering and going out on a Red Cross deployment out to New Jersey, actually, during Hurricane Irene, I believe was the situation. But he told me about his experiences and really loved it. And I had an opportunity that I could start volunteering and made some more time available for me. So that's how I kind of got started with them and went up to the Red Cross chapter in the Twin Cities and started talking to them, and they got me pointed in the right direction on where I can do the most volunteering and the most help.
I'll bet they were happy to have a tech sergeant for the Minnesota Air National Guard come out and say, I got some time, I'll volunteer.
Yeah, I think they're happy to get anybody that's willing to volunteer is definitely a good thing for them. But coincidentally, my work experience doing emergency management with the Minnesota Air National Guard was a big benefit, I think, to them as well.
They're uniquely qualified to go help.
Absolutely. But they'll take pretty much anybody that has some willingness to learn, I guess, in general, is the biggest key for them.
Now, how did you get involved in this the volunteer deployment with the Red Cross?
Well, it was actually kind of unique. I have been volunteering with the Disaster Action Team for the past year. They call it DAT. And as I went in to go get promoted from a trainee to a responder, I had mentioned to them that I was really interested in going out to help with the Hurricane Sandy disaster relief. And when they asked me, when can you go, I said, well, I'm thinking maybe over Christmas and New Year's. This is the day before Thanksgiving, mind you. And at that point, then they said to me, well, can you leave on Friday? And
took you by surprise, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely. I told them, you know what, I need to go back to my work because I'm scheduled to work over the next 2 weeks. So, and that was the deployment time frame, was a 2-week volunteer deployment with them. So I went back to work, and my commander, I asked him, are you willing to let me go for 2 weeks to volunteer with them? And he said, he looked at me, and I kind of had this weird look, and he said, absolutely. And I said, you don't think I'm crazy? And he goes, no, if I could do it, I'd do it in a heartbeat. He goes, but I've got a family and kids at home, so it's harder for me to pick up and go that quick.
We're speaking with Tech Sergeant Rebecca Tongan from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, so you got cleared to take some days off,
yep,
and go on your own time.
Yep.
And the next thing you knew, you're out in New York.
Yeah.
What were you responsible for? What were you supposed to do?
Oh, my goodness. It was really interesting showing up. It was similar to a military deployment when you show up and you're kind of told go and check in here and there. And what I ended up doing was I worked in their community partnership program as well as their government liaison section for a few days. With community partnerships, their intent is to ideally have us go out to the community, talk to the folks out there, talk to the organizations, find out what they have as far as capabilities, what they have available, and try to match up their capabilities with another organization providing support to the community. Prime example would be like a local soup kitchen getting a lot of food donated, and now they don't know where to take all the food to the folks that need it.
How big of a mess was it? Were you astonished?
I was amazed. I'd never seen anything so destructive in my life, I don't think, especially right out along the coast. It was just absolutely crazy, the boardwalk being completely broken off. Just hearing the stories from the personnel affected was just amazing, how they were able to survive and just the resiliency behind it in general.
So the community partnership you're working with is to help some churches and organizations share goods and services, whatever they can do to help.
Yeah, absolutely.
You told me a story about one young man that was really helping.
Yeah, he was actually a 22-year-old young man, I think, that decided that he didn't have a house anymore, so he decided he was going to put up a pop-up tent on the corner next to their local church. Took in whatever donations he could, blankets, clothing, food, whatever he could help with, and was giving that away to folks processing through his pop-up tent every single day. They figured he was probably helping around 200 to 300 people coming through the tent every day and providing them help. Well, conveniently, he didn't have a jacket. He really needed more warm clothes because it was cold. And we paired him up with another organization that also got him clothing to be able to get him warmer. He was helping all these other people and giving the clothes off his back away. And we were able to help him find a way to get clothes on his back to stay warm as well.
Homeless himself, and he was just out doing everything he could do to help everyone else.
It was amazing.
What a great story. It takes sometimes in disasters, you see some of these wonderful stories, don't you?
Yep, absolutely. It was so neat to see the community come together. And that's ultimately what we want to help facilitate when I'm working with the Red Cross.
Now, were you comfortable out there? Did you pack a toothbrush and a change of clothes and off you went?
Just like a military deployment, they kind of give you a packing list and tell you what to bring with. I'd been told by other people, make sure you pack light. And they were spot on. I brought as little as I could for the 2 weeks I was there and got by with pretty much the bare minimum of what I needed and being able to go to the laundromat one time. So,
what would you tell other people that had an opportunity to volunteer with the Red Cross? Would you tell them to go?
Absolutely. I wouldn't even second guess it if you have the opportunity and time to volunteer.
You felt that good about that volunteer deployment?
Yes. When I came back, I've never felt so good about something I've done, I don't think, in my life.
One last question for you. There's a lot of young ladies out there listening to us. Yeah. If they're thinking about going into the Minnesota National Guard, what would you tell them after you've been in the service for 12 years?
You know what? I've been so fortunate over my career to be able to do so much and had such supportive commanders. The opportunity to excel and work with your community with the Minnesota Air National Guard is just completely there as long as you're willing to put some time out there to work with them. And definitely a great opportunity, education being paid for. I was able to get a lot of educational benefits as well while I've been in the service. So take advantage of it if you can do it and are willing to.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm happy that you're part of the Minnesota Air National Guard. You're doing a great job, even volunteering.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate
Rebecca,
this opportunity.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you too.
This is Tech Sergeant Rebecca Tongan from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. In a moment, we'll discover a hunting guide service available to our wounded warriors. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Major General Rick Nash, Minnesota's Adjutant General, encouraging you to hire today's veterans. Visit PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans. That's PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining me now is Tony Tengwall, the Vice President of Wounded Warrior Guide Service. Tony, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Tony, I understand you were a veteran of the Army National Guard.
Yep. I was out in Charlie Company, one of the 151. I deployed to Iraq, Baghdad in 2004, 2005. Spent 11 years in the Guard out in the 151.
And now you are a member, or you work for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yep, I work for the Higher Education Veterans Program in the colleges down in southeast Minnesota.
So you're helping all of our veterans sort out the GI Bill these days.
I am, yes.
That's a good job,
too. The best of my ability.
We'll save that for another show.
That's right.
We'll bring you back to talk about that. Tell me, a Wounded Warriors Guide Service, what is it?
Well, we are a nonprofit, a 501c3 company that or organization, started in 2009. Basically, the way we came to be is our executive director, Brian Olfus, up in Bemidji, had a friend who had gotten hurt pretty bad over in Iraq, and when he was back in the hospital, they took him out on a hunt there, and when he came back, he talked to Brian about how much, you know, how great it was, how the good feeling of being out hunting, and Brian said, well, that's easy, let's go, and We saw the way that it affects people, and now we just try to get people out to get their life kind of back on track and get them reintegrated into society.
Now, is this program available to all veterans, all disabled veterans?
Yep. One thing that sets us apart from others is you don't have to be a combat wounded veteran for us. As long as you have a service connection from the VA, even if it's a 0% rating, you're eligible for our services. And it's 100% cost-free to the veteran. We can hook you up with equipment if you need it, all the gear, pay for gas, meals, whatever it is, lodging, whatever it is, we can take care of that.
Now, Tony, some of our veterans are coming back and they're surviving things they never used to survive when I was in Vietnam, but how seriously injured can you help?
We can basically accommodate anyone. Now, we have an action tracker wheelchair, which is a wheelchair on a track vehicle, basically, that can go anywhere. We have a pontoon that we just got through a grant that we can get a wheelchair up on that for duck hunting, fishing, whatever the case is. And like I said, we, you know, it's not just about the physically injured. It's a lot of it is the mental aspect that we focus on.
Now, is this program just here in Minnesota, or is there?
No, we've actually expanded. We started here in Minnesota, and we added a chapter. Our main chapter is based out of Bemidji, where Brian's from. We have a chapter in Mankato, and we've recently added one in North Dakota, and just last month, one in Wisconsin as well.
So how many of our disabled veterans have you helped so far?
I don't have the exact numbers, but I think we got over 50 people out in our second year, and this year we're shooting for over 100. So we're bumping our goals up as we go and as we grow.
Does some of them come back then?
Yeah. We actually, one of the main things that we have issues finding is veterans that can go on hunts. So we basically have a pool. You can go to our website and sign up. If you have a group of friends that want to go on a hunt, we can accommodate that. Otherwise, we'll have organizations that'll call us and say, hey, we want to do this. We need 5 vets, and we'll start calling people. And basically, we keep calling until we find people that can go, and a lot of times it's short notice, so you have maybe a week to plan, so it's a little bit more difficult. But for the most part, we try to limit it to one hunt per year per vet.
So there's information. Where is your website?
Our website is at www.wwgsmn.org. And then from there, you can link out to our other chapters as well.
Or woundedwarriorsguide.com, and we'll have a link to that on our Facebook page. So any of you disabled vets that are interested in going hunting this fall, go visit that website, and then you can figure out how to contact Tony and his partners.
Yep, absolutely. And it's not just hunting. We do everything from fishing. If it's bird watching you're into, you just want to get out, go on a canoe trip, whatever it is, any outdoor recreational therapy, we will find someone that can help out.
We're speaking with Tony Tangwall, the Vice President of Wounded Warrior Guide Service on Minnesota Military Radio. Tony, you were talking to me about something. 2500, what was this, Your Honor?
The 2500 Heroes Campaign. Basically what that is, we have in the plans, our goal is to build what's called Warrior Lodge. It's going to be a fully handicap accessible lodge for our hunts, for vets to come to. Basically what the 2500 Heroes Campaign is we're looking for 2500 people to donate $100 a piece so we can purchase the land. And then from there, we've got Lukacik Architecture in Bemidji has drawn up plans for us for a state-of-the-art lodge. And then from there, we'll go into our second phase, which will be raising money to build the lodge itself.
So you've already picked a spot. Do you know where the land is?
No, we haven't got that yet, but we've got a long ways to go on the money, so we've got some time to come up with. We've got a few ideas, but it'll probably be up in northern Minnesota somewhere.
So if any of our listeners want to donate, they can go to woundedwarriorsguide.com?
Yep. If you go to the webpage, there will be a 2500 Heroes Campaign tab on there, and you can go and it'll collect your information. You can do it all through credit card or however you want to do it.
Now, when you're taking these wounded vets out to hunt or sightsee or take pictures, do you need some volunteers too?
Yeah, everything we do is volunteer. All of the guides, everyone that works with us, basically we just go out and find, you know, whether it's farmers that have some land or, you know, if a guy has a boat and he'll volunteer up his boat to take some guys out someday. So we're always looking for land. We're looking for, you know, money to help pay for people to get out, to get supplies. Basically anything you can offer, because that's kind of how we work is from both ways. If we need to find something, we'll call around till we find a way to accommodate these vets. But if you've got something that, you know, you could help out with, we'd really appreciate it.
Tony, is there a bit of a therapeutic benefit for our injured veterans to go out and hunt again?
Absolutely. When I got back, I was living in the cities, and I'd start having some troubles with, you know, all the people and just need to get away. And I'd go, you know, up by Ely for 4 or 5 days at a time. And that's where I started to realize that being out hunting, fishing really takes the stress off. And another big part of it is being out with the other disabled vets, other wounded vets, and getting to know them and being able to just reflect on your time while you served. A lot of times we'll have groups that deployed together that'll come and get back together for a hunt, and they'll tell stories, and, you know, maybe they don't get together any other time because they're spread out across the state, but we've really had a lot of fun. Every hunt, it's more about the memories that we make than what we actually kill.
Get out in the woods and act like full-bodied people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a good time, isn't it?
It is. It's a blast.
Tony, any final thoughts for our listeners?
We are trying to expand who we are and get our name out there. You can find us at Game Fair in the fall. We've got other fundraisers coming up, the Krause Anderson Walleye Classic in Bemidji. Every chapter is going to be putting a vet in to fish on that. We've got a lot of hunts coming up, whether it's Arkansas Duck Hunt, Saskatchewan Hunt this fall, walleye and muskie trips over the summer. If you want to get out with us, go to our website, look us up, and we'll do our best to get you out where you need to be.
Sounds like a fun slate of activities. Tony, thanks for joining us today.
Yep, you bet. I appreciate it.
It's Tony Tangwall, Vice President of Wounded Warrior Guide Service and Minnesota Military Radio. A couple of mentions today. You can have a night out and help a great cause by going to see the documentary Honor Flight. The film follows four local veterans on their day with Honor Flight as they travel to Washington, D.C. Starts with a phone call inviting them on the flight to Washington to tour the memorials and the welcome home. $3 from each purchase ticket will be donated to Honor Flight Twin Cities for future flights. The Honor Flight organizations offers free flights to World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to see the National World War II monuments. There'll be two showings, one at AMC Rosedale 14, March 11th at 7:30 p.m., and one at Carmichael Oakdale Stadium 20, Oakdale, Minnesota, March 13th at 7 p.m. You can find the link on MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com to purchase tickets in order for your donation to help future honor flights for our World War II veterans. Also, please remember, March 12th, Veterans Day on the Hill. Meet at the Rotunda at 9:30. If you want information on that, go to Minnesota CTF, CTF as in Commander's Task Force, MinnesotaCTF.org. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel David Hamler, Tech Sergeant Rebecca Tongan, Tony Tangwall, Commissioner Larry Shelliteau, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we get some great information from the Military Order of the Purple Heart and find out what it was like to fly in a B-17 in World War II. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.